Hi there. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on whatever time you're listening to this. My name's Marquise, and I want to tell a story of my life and how I became an NFT artist and of a brand that I'm creating on the Ethereum blockchain. I'm going to start off by telling my life story to give my art and creation some provenance, and then I'm going to get into NFTs and what I think of them, and the direction of them, and the power of them. So, I was born in Pittsfield, Mass, on July 8th, 1987. My name's Marquise Williamson. My mother named me that after a friend's middle name. I have a twin sister and two older sisters. One's a half. My twin came out a little extra black because I was in a real hurry to get into this beautiful world. So of course, I popped out first. We are a nice brown complexion, by the way. My parents were the first to mix outside of their races. So my sisters and I are completely 50-50. Although you wouldn't be able to tell looking at my sister Megan's fair skin with many nice freckles. Chucky is our father. I'll be referring to him as Chucky throughout this story, as he's never really been there. He's made some real bad choices in his life, and I don't wish to be associated with him. But the story goes, my sister and I were conceived during a jail furlough. And, of course, he was in prison during our birth. So I'll start off with my first day of school and my first home that I can remember. It was a nice greenhouse on Liberty Street in North Adams, Mass. My first day of school, I had learned about the operator and how to call the fire department. So what did I do that night when my mother wasn't looking? I grabbed the phone, I hit zero, said my house is on fire, and hung up. I ran upstairs to see if I had summoned some fire trucks. Little did I know, the operator called right back and my mother answered the phone. Ha ha. So she was on to me and played a bit of a prank. She called me downstairs and said the fire department was here to see me, but it wasn't the fire department, it was Chucky. I don't really remember what happened after seeing him in the doorway. And I only have three other memories from that greenhouse on Liberty Street. The first is me smashing my twin sister in the forehead with a classic old school piggy bank. We were about three or four. And I have no idea why I did it. But I do know that that's the only time I physically or mentally hurt either of my sisters. The next memory is much more pleasant. We took a frog home that we had found while picnicking at a park with a river right in downtown Williamstown, Mass. We kept it in a small tank with no filter, and within a week the stench was so incredible, my mother threw it out in the backyard, and she said it would be fine, but it probably wasn't. The last memory was the day my sisters and I entered the system. It was called DSS back then, Department of Social Services. My sister Megan was in school as she was about six. Tila and I were about four and home with my mother, and she was unconscious for several hours. I remember vividly the both of us painting her legs with probably every bottle of nail polish she owned. My mother had bipolar and was in a manic episode and was off her medicine at the time. The next thing I can remember is Robin, our DSS worker, showed up and brought us to our mother's best friend's house. We stayed there for about 6 months before officially entering the DSS system. I believe we briefly went back to my mother's care in Pittsfield before being placed into a semi-permanent foster home in Pittsfield, Mass. One great thing DSS did was always manage to keep me and my sisters together, as they knew we were pretty dependent on each other, and at times, Megan was like our mother. We stayed at this foster home for 1 year. Some real nice church-going people called the Pratts. So now that brings me to the decade chapter of my life. After once again briefly going back to my mother, we went back to North Adams. I was 6 years old when I walked through the doors of the Arnold's home for the very first time. They were very nice, middle-class doors, and they had the biggest house on the block from many blocks around. I had everything a kid could want or need at one point or another, except for physical and emotional love. So a small part of me is very cold, and the rest searches for the love I never received. Christmases were pretty amazing. I always got more than I expected. Wayne, my stepdad's favorite holiday was Christmas, which meant like a $5,000 Christmas electric bill. He has, for 30 years now, made his yard into an award-winning holiday display. He's won many city and regional awards. The city residents love walking through the yard and peeking into a playhouse he hand-built and turns into Santa's workshop during Christmas. Summers were pretty great. Little League and fishing. My biggest regret is not hitting a home run, at least over the fence during Little League, as I had one inside the park home run, as I was always very fast, and is why I skipped minor league and went straight to Little League. But in my first year, I was 9 years old, I was hit by a pitch. It's also one of my biggest regrets, but I swear this kid was a 6'5" Randy Johnson, and it made me scared of the ball at that young age. And I wish someone had described to me the pain of regret, and that the physical pain never lasts as long as the pain of regret. There was an above ground swimming pool at the Arnold's, but it didn't do me any good, because if you ever happen to see me swimming, I'd be doing the doggy paddle. And when I wasn't doing the doggy paddle in the family swimming pool, you could have caught me by myself playing the Sega or Super Nintendo in my sister's room, as I wasn't allowed to have a TV for many reasons. Or you could have caught me in my room building many intricate model cars and planes. I really enjoyed painting and putting the stickers on at the end. So now I'm starting my first grade at my third grade school at Sullivan Elementary. And good thing I've never had a problem making friends or sliding from one group to the next. And every story has a girl. And my first girl I ever had a crush on was a really pretty Jewish girl with black hair and an amazing singing voice. We would briefly date later in eighth grade after our friends figured out we mutually liked each other, so they designated us a couple, LOL. But she was so shy, she never spoke to me again. But the last big grade school memory that I remember was going to Disney World in the fifth grade. That was a pretty amazing experience, and I feel lucky to have went. But that was the end of the innocence of my childhood. As the summer of sixth grade, I started smoking weed, drinking, and stealing from my stepfather. I spent a lot of time by myself in my room, especially vibing to my music. My first CD was the Marshall Mathers LP. A couple other CDs were Fabulous Street Dreams and 50 Cent Get Rich or Die Tryin', which I can remember vibing to the Get Rich or Die Tryin' as I was into skateboarding when I was 16. You could have caught me around the block with my so-called skip-proof CD Walkman doing ollies on the side streets. And a few blocks over, my first best friends lived, the Thomas Brothers. We were part of a group called the Kemp Crew after a nearby street that was connected to some woods in the park. The woods where we smoked countless blunts and I got wasted for the very first time. That's a funny story of about 8 to 10 of us, and we all watered down our parents' liquor bottles, and two of us ended up in the hospital. I was one of them, LOL. We had our stomachs pumped. Fun times. I committed my first real crime with the brothers as well, a cat burglary of sorts on the neighborhood corner store. They got on the roof, I was the lookout, we got some beer and cigarettes. Cops came, but that was our neighborhood. and we played shadow games between the spotlights all the way back to their house. That was a hell of a sleepover. By 14 to 17, I started selling weed in and out of school. I was arrested in my first 6 months try at ninth grade for selling marijuana joints. And before that, one random morning, as always, I hopped off the bus and walked by the front doors and headed to my friend's car to blaze. Me and my boy were stopped by a pretty blonde, and she asked us what we were doing, and when she found out, asked if she could join. So of course I said sure. I had some really ill kind bud at the time, some straight orange kind bud. I've never found kind bud like that since. So after going into the school and blazing with the four of us, we had our tech classes that week, as I was in a McCann Technical School and she was in her catechism class. And at about 9 a.m. she left and went to the nurse and told the nurse that she thought she was gonna die. So of course she told the story. So they came and got me from my electronics class, and the police were waiting for me in the principal's office. It was the second time I'd be put on probation. The first time I was put on probation was for distribution of Ritalin in seventh grade. I was put on Ritalin in the fifth grade. And as soon as my friends found out about it a couple years later, they really wanted it. So I started selling it to them. And I was told on for that time also, which made me accustomed to police at 14 and what not to do and what not to say. So it wasn't an all bad experience. Shortly after the school arrest, I ran away from the Arnolds to meet my parents, preferably Chucky. And I grabbed my backpack, my CD player, and rolled away on my skateboard. I lasted for 8 days on the run, about 2 miles from my former home. Chucky would sell and pawn my skateboard and CD player for 40-ounce bottles as soon as I was arrested. I ended up in Westfield, Mass. Juvenile Detention Center for the first time. I was 16. I was locked up for about 9 months as a juvenile, and that includes a DYS commitment. After that first short stay in Westfield, I tried ninth grade again in Pittsfield, Mass. Lasted for 2 months before going back to Westfield Detention Center. When I was released, my DCF worker, Todd, set me up with a GED test at Berkshire Community College. I passed every single course with flying colors except for English. I got exactly what was needed to pass. So I've never even finished half of ninth grade, and I got my GED back then. Which goes to show that when people say, when are we going to need trigonometry in the real world, you should tell your teacher, never. But I do regret leaving school so early, only for the only fact that I wish someone had told me as soon as high school stopped, I'd stop seeing 90% of all my friends. So now, at this time, I'm 16 years old, and besides a few DCF / DSS visits, I never really knew my mother up until this point. They had to pay me to be my own foster parent at 17 years old to live with my mother because years earlier, she had signed her rights over. By the time the retro kicked in, I received my first big check for $1,250. I ended up buying 1988 Oldsmobile Cutlass, and I went back to North Adams to live with my mother. And the first thing I did is I went and picked up the Thomas Brothers. We got drunk and went up a dirt road looking for a party that wasn't happening that night. Speeding up the mountain like we were riding in a wooden roller coaster cart was fun as fuck until the ride down. Being drunk and a very inexperienced driver going 60 miles an hour down a dirt mountain road, I went to take a slight right and just slid straight. Haha. The last thing I saw before landing 100 feet off the road into the woods was a 6-foot massive tree trunk. Luckily, it was so massive that we hit it at the slightest angle, and we rode up the roots like a jump. We landed upside down, and somehow all were skinny enough to squeeze out of the only escape passenger window. If the car had caught on fire, I would have burned alive, as it took me 15 minutes to dig one arm out from my sunroof that had ended up underneath the car. My mother tried hard to stop us from taking the car that night, but I thought I was grown, and I told her that she didn't have the right to tell me what to do anymore. I'm really sorry about that, Ma. I stayed with my mother for less than a year before moving in with my first baby's mom. She has 10 years on me, 3 months out of the year. She was 28 when I met her, and I was still 17. But me and all my friends told her that I was older. I stayed until I was 25. We had 2 boys together, Isaiah and Elijah. But I pretty much needed to live some more, and one day just told her, see you later. But I did smash a goal of having kids before 20, pun intended. The first time I went to jail as an adult, I was 18, for a liquor store smash and grab. My friend and I were the heroes of this party, so to speak. We ran out of liquor, so we had the great idea to go get some more, and it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, so we had to throw a rock through a 10 by 15 window, and I'll never forget it. We threw the rocks at the same time, and for about 2 or 3 seconds, there were 2 perfect holes in it in a spider web of glass, and then the glass rained down like a waterfall. I was put in jail for 30 days with a year of probation and a year suspended, and in my 11th month of probation, I was arrested in my vehicle because I was drunk and passed out. I went back to jail. After leaving that relationship, I moved back to Pittsfield and I bought my own car. And within a year, I ended up in jail again for 18 months for drinking and driving and yelling all sorts of profanities at the police because I was very upset. I was 25, a young black male with a nice 1998 Oldsmobile Model 98, and it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I wasn't aware of the move over law, and I was driving really well. I always drove well drunk. I was coming from the bar that night with my cousin Keisha, and I didn't move over, and this guy seen me. He was doing a traffic stop, 2 o'clock in the morning. He saw me drive by him in the right lane, ran back to his cruiser, and chased me down. He thought it was real funny that I was 2 blocks from my home, too. So, I got 18 months for yelling profanities and my first DUI charge. And while in jail, I met a lot of drug dealers. And during the 7 years I was with my baby's mother, I was in the house a lot, and I had seen all my friends fall victim to the heroin epidemic. So I put 2 and 2 together and decided to become a drug dealer when I got out of jail. I spent about 8 months around my boy G, and we created a real nice bond. And we happened to get out within a week of each other. And then I randomly ran into him in that first week. We were both out. I gave him $100. He gave me a couple bundles. I set my ringtone to Started From the Bottom by Drake and hopped on the bus to North Adams. Never looked back. And I'd sell drugs for about the next 5 years and be in and out of jail 7 to 8 times during that period. One of those periods was another 18-month sentence for my first drug case. When I was arrested for that case, I had a 7-month pregnant girlfriend, and around 3 to 5 months we had found out that Jace had a serious heart condition called double in left palate, which means he was missing one chamber of his heart. and his right ventricle. He needed 3 open heart surgeries to best fix his situation. The first one was performed at 3 days old at Boston Children's Hospital. The second was at 6 months old. He never made it to his third procedure, which would have been around 2.5 years old, and was called the Fontaine procedure, after the doctor who discovered / invented it. Despite having his chest plate cracked open twice and a feeding tube, from his muscles and his heart working so hard, that's the reason why he had the feeding tube, Jace was a very happy baby. But because his heart was beating so hard, his muscles and milestones were harder and farther to reach. Also, 50% of kids with these conditions catch cancer from all the radiation screens and checks. He would have had a life expectancy of around 30 years old, as his heart was beating twice as hard as a normal heart. His heart didn't beat, by the way. His heart sounded like a swishing washing machine. And it was one of the last things I heard before walking out of the hospital room and asking 2 jail guards to bring me back to jail because I couldn't go through with it anymore. I left my family, along with many of her family members in the room, to pull the plug, as I chose to go back to jail and just live inside those walls. I regret that, but at the time it was the easiest thing for me to do. But it cost me the relationship with my second baby's mother. On August 5th, Jace left us peacefully in his sleep. There was a slight chance of where he was at in his stage of development that could happen. His heart was restarted 45 minutes after getting to the hospital, after the incessant pleas from his mother, Robin. Far too much time had passed, though, and the plug was pulled on August 8th. 2 months after this, 2 weeks before I was to be released, my mother was hit by a car during a bipolar manic episode, which I also blame myself for not being around for, and causing her to go into the manic episode because she knew I was about to be released and I had nowhere to go, and she was working hard to get another apartment for herself, which she was set to have the Monday I was released. I was fortunate enough to be on work release during both of these deaths, so I was able to go to both of them in normal clothes with no shackles. And the last time I seen my mother was standing in front of my son's grave. I also feel a little guilty about not getting parole. I should have gotten parole, but I was a little too impatient, and the lady had told me come back in 30 days, and I was upset because I was doing everything well and was set to be on work release, so I thought it should just be given to me. I said some things that I shouldn't have to the parole board and got up and walked out of the room. And on the way back to the block, the officer told me that I'd shot myself in the foot because in 30 days I would have guaranteed to have gotten it, which meant that I would have been home the night that Jace's heart stopped. So maybe something would have been different. So when I got out, I went back to selling drugs, and I became a heroin addict this time. I was 29, and I would just run the streets from couch to couch, selling heroin until I was about 32. Until one summer I went to jail 3 times, which the only benefit to that was I kept getting clean off the heroin. And I finally decided that after I had this court case, which I'm still fighting now, subsequent distribution of heroin, it was September 26th, I had a court case, and I'd asked my sister to send me to my other sister in Maine. So I left North Adams, Mass, September 27, 2019, to start over in Maine, 700 miles away, And 5 months into that, I found a video by Earl Nightingale that changed everything about my life upon hearing it the first time. My brain just shifted and everything clicked, and I was no longer a drug addict. And I started to grab life by the horns and direct and steer the future that I wanted to walk in. Thanks for listening. That's the end of this episode. In the next episode, I'm going to tell you guys how I found cryptocurrency and NFTs, and how and why I created the Ethereum brand NFT Jordan. Thanks for listening.